Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Today is Monday, June 20th, 2022. A quick preview of today's docket. What is the new reason why Ghislaine Maxwell thinks she shouldn't go to prison? Why didn't the attorneys suing the Michigan's Oxford Community School sue the Crumleys? More information on that terrible Uvalde matter. Examples of why more information you can get on any subject is better. And college frat parties. It is fun and games until someone nearly dies and is permanently disabled. What a place to abandon your children, a place called Cemetery Island, and then the Disney bus driver getting his chance to go to a magical place, I'll explain, and finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Ghislaine Maxwell's lawyers claim that Miss Maxwell was on an IRA hit list and went into hiding from July of 2019 when that man named Jeff was arrested until she was arrested in 2020 because she had received death threats. Now, in legal documents prepared for Miss Maxwell's sentencing, which is set for next week, her attorneys claim that this was not her first death threat. Her attorneys tell the judge that Miss Maxwell was on an IRA hit list when her father was a member of parliament back in the late 60s. Now, the lawyers told the court that decades earlier, when Miss Maxwell was just a child and her father was a member of parliament, UK authorities found a hit list of potential targets in a safe house used by the Irish Republican Army. Her team added that to Miss Maxwell's name was first on the list. Now, quick background, Robert Maxwell escaped Nazi occupation and joined the British Army, where he won the Military Cross. After the war, he became a British citizen and was the Labour Member of Parliament for Buckingham from 1964 to 1970. Now, the Troubles, the name given to the conflict in Northern Ireland, which lasted from the late 1960s to 1998 and reached its height in 1972, would see four members of parliament killed by Republican paramilitary groups. The Provisional IRA was responsible for the murder of the Ulster Unionist Robert Bradford in 1981, Conservative Sir Anthony Barry in 1984, Britain bombing, and Tony Ian Gow in 1990. Another group, the Irish National Liberation Army, killed Tory Northern Ireland Secretary Airí Neave in 1979 after a car bomb exploded at the House of Commons, and Ghislaine was also known as the favorite of her disgraced father, who named his yacht the Lady Ghislaine and raided $460 million from his own company's pension fund. Now, filing with the court also said that Miss Maxwell's life has been ruined. Recently, an inmate in her cell block said that an extra 20 years in jail would be worth the money they would get for killing her. Her lawyer stated the inmate who made the threat has been moved to the SHU, which is known as the Special Housing Unit, aka Solitary Confinement, presumably to protect Miss Maxwell. Now, this incident reflects the brutal reality that numerous prison inmates would not hesitate to kill Miss Maxwell, whether for money, fame, or simple street cred. Her lawyers have also mentioned that Miss Maxwell's emotional wound, saying that she had a difficult, traumatic childhood with an overbearing, narcissistic, and demanding father. They claim this made her vulnerable to the man named Jeff, who she met right after her father's death. Now, according to attorneys, it is the biggest mistake she made in her life, one that she has not and will never repeat. Last week, Maxwell's attorneys urged Judge Nathan to sentence the disgraced British socialite to a rough 4 years, less than the probation department's recommendation of 20 years in prison. And if you don't recall, in December, a jury found Miss Maxwell guilty of 6 counts, the most serious, for sex trafficking minors, and her sentence will be handed down on June 28th in Manhattan's United States District Court. We'll let you know how that goes. Reminder to like the video if you do, subscribe if you have not done so already, leave me a comment, and hit the bell so that you get notifications of when we go live or post a new video. The Crumleys, remember them? Yeah, I'm the one that said I'm really surprised that they're charged. Well, guess what? To avoid some civil liability, Michigan's Oxford Community School has now legally blamed the alleged murderer, Ethan Crumley, and his parents for the November 2021 school shooting that left 4 dead and 7 injured. Now, according to a notice of a non-party at fault filed in federal court, defense lawyers pointed the finger at Crumley and his parents, James Crumley and Jennifer Crumley, in one of several civil lawsuits filed against the district and its staff. The lawsuits are aimed at the school's alleged transgressions in handling the teen just before he allegedly pulled the trigger. Now, in a $100 million lawsuit filed by Jeffrey Franz and Brady Franz on behalf of their children, Riley Franz and Bella Franz, states that Riley was shot in the neck as a direct result of acts by the district and its administrators, causing her severe trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, fright, shock, terror, anxiety, as well as physical and emotional injuries. Now, the named defendants include several school district administrators, including the district's now former superintendent and the high school principal where the shooting occurred. Several similar lawsuits have also been filed by other victims that allege that the school district failed to recognize warning signs that Ethan Crumley presented an extreme risk of violence. Well, the district responded to those accusations in other documents filed on Friday. It asserts that the introductory allegation in the Franz lawsuit are denied for the reason that they are untrue as factual representations and contain incorrect and erroneous conclusions of law. In one section of the reply, the district refuses to admit or deny that Riley and Bella Franz were students, but in another area, it did agree that they were indeed pupils. The district refused to admit or deny that it was a municipal corporation duly organized, or that it carried out functions such as organizing, teaching, operating, staffing, training, and supervising the staff, counselors, and teachers at the Oxford High School. The district further would neither admit nor deny that on November 11th, 2021, Ethan Crumley brought a severed bird head in a mason jar containing a yellow liquid to Oxford High School and left the jar on a toilet paper dispenser in the boys' bathroom. Further on, the defendants denied that the teacher observed Ethan viewing violent videos of shootings and notified administrators by email of what was occurring. The defendant then denied that each teacher caught Crumley drawing horrific images on his math assignment. The defendant denied that they decided not to search Crumley's backpack, and they denied threatening to call Child Protective Services on the parents if they did not see counseling or Ethan Crumley within 48 hours of when he was caught allegedly making violent drawings. Now, in criminal court proceedings, Crumley's parents' attorneys have said they were given the option to leave Ethan in school and assume that the school had things under control. So what does this really mean? Sure, the family of injured or killed students, my heart goes out to them. They're angry. They're looking to blame somebody. But if you're only going to sue the school, I assure you, in the legal proceedings and the defense attorneys in that particular case have a duty to deny the allegations until they have further information that's presented in discovery. Additionally, they're going to name non-party defendants. And that's going to be at a certain point, usually within a very short time after a criminal case is filed, where you have to say, I'm not responsible. You need to include these people. Oh, but by the way, you forgot to sue them. Why did you forget to sue them? Oh, because when you go to court and you include all of those people, the jury's going to decide and say, ooh, maybe the guy over there that pulled the trigger was, I don't know, say 60% at fault, and the school district was 35 or 40%, maybe the parents 5, right? Well, guess what? In most jurisdictions, then they're not criminally responsible. So is it really a quest for the truth? Is it a quest for money? Well, guess what? It's litigation. It's civil litigation. The truth, or a pretty close version of it, is going to come out between the beginning or the end, but no one is going to pay $100 million just like that, based upon the criminal complaint. It's going to take years, and the attorneys are going to deny everything and say that they are without sufficient information to either admit or deny, and therefore deny. Then the plaintiffs have to prove it, and the case moves on. I just find it curious that the parents didn't actually sue the guy, the juvenile, who did the bad deeds. Oh, and include the parents because everybody said they were responsible, hence the reason they're charged. Oh, that's right. They don't have any money. Not like a school district that has insurance. All right, remember, you can listen to Crime Talk anytime on the go by listening on any of your favorite podcasting apps. That includes Audible, iHeartRadio, Apple, and Spotify. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next, Uvalde. According to a new report, surveillance footage from the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, seems to indicate that officers did not try the doors to see if they were even unlocked. Now, according to the surveillance footage, neither Uvalde Consolidated Independent School District Police Chief Pete Arriondo nor any other officer ever attempted to open the doors where the gunman held two classrooms full of children, and one of the doors may have been unlocked the entire time. The first time anyone tried to breach the doorway was when they had received the keys more than an hour and a half after the shooting began. There were 77 minutes between the moments when the 18-year-old gunman entered the school and when the police finally shot and killed him. Police sources are now saying they believe that the gunman couldn't have locked the doors to the classroom from the inside. Now, in an interview as early as June 6th of this year, a teacher by the name of Arnulfo Reyes, who was wounded in the shooting, said that he had previously complained to the school that the door to the classroom did not properly lock from the inside. Now, the new allegations seem to undermine the police chief's claim that he had to wait to receive the keys before entering the classroom. It had been reported that the city of Uvalde had hired a private law firm to help prevent the release of the body cam footage from the massacre. The investigation into the police response is ongoing, but it's not looking good for the chief. And my recollection is he still has not resigned. Of course he hasn't. Next, a quick update on the case that we brought you last week, and this is why you need to get as much information as possible. So last week we brought you the story of John Barnes, who's now 46, who allegedly has been accused of sexually assaulting Crystal Abelseth in 2005 when she was 16 and he was 30 after meeting her at a bar in Louisiana. Abelseth is now speaking out for the first time just a few weeks after the court granted the alleged rapist sole custody for their own teenage daughter. Now, Abelseth is also required to pay Barnes child support. And despite the Louisiana statutory rape laws, which apply if the victim is under 17, regardless of whether they physically consented, Barnes has never been charged with a sexual assault. Well, now Barnes is speaking out against the claim, saying that he thought the girl was an adult when they met in 2005 because she was in the bar using a fake ID, telling everyone that she was in fact a college student. Barnes said, "I had no idea she was 16 and I didn't sexually assault her. That is absolutely unequivocally false." He also denied ever laying a hand on his daughter or drugging her, as the girl's mother recently alleged. He claimed he was granted custody of her after her mother gave an unrestricted cell phone, which she used to post sexually explicit videos on TikTok. Abelseth alleged that he drugged and sexually assaulted their daughter, similar to what she alleged he did to her when she was 16. She also claims he was charged because he's well connected in the community. Barnes claims the girl's mother told the child to invent the claims of sexual abuse in a bid to have him arrested. Barnes is now sharing more details of the paternity proceedings and the legal battle he and Abelseth have been going through for years. Now, Barnes says Abelseth created an unstable home for their daughter and they allowed a revolving door of men to sleep over in their house. He also said he only discovered he was the child's father in 2011 when she was five and a different man's name, a man in prison, was on the birth certificate. Abelseth says that Barnes is now blocking her from speaking to their daughter. The pair will meet in court on July 15th. So you have to wonder why it wasn't charged, but when it turns out the prosecutor may have had information that she was using a false ID, it's a little bit mitigating, no doubt. And now there's further claims of sexual assault. Color me skeptical on this one. Good old frat parties. Well, if you've ever been to one, well, you're not really missing anything. A bunch of douchey guys hanging out, drinking. That's right. Well, Ryan Delaney and Thomas Schultz were indicted Friday in Missouri's Boone County. Charges come in connection with the treatment of Daniel Santulli, a teenager whose family says he was forced to drink until his heart stopped during pledge month at Phi Gamma Delta last October. They are also known as the Fiji. Now, Schultz is facing an additional felony charge for tampering with physical evidence. Santulli had been left permanently and severely disabled as a result in what his family lawyers say is the worst known hazing incident of abuse in U.S. history. Now, Delaney is accused of handing the bottle of vodka to Santulli and telling him to drink, while Schultz was the fraternity's vice president and bought the vodka for the party. Now, surveillance footage has emerged of the brutal hazing that night, where the teenager was ordered to down a 1.75-liter bottle of Tito's and had been force-fed to him through a tube. The footage also shows his panicked frat brothers trying to carry him out into a car to take him to the hospital once they realized how severe the condition was. When Santulli passed out and went into cardiac arrest, he was carried to a car and dumped outside a hospital. By the time he got there, he had stopped breathing for long enough to cause severe brain damage. The 19-year-old's blood alcohol content was 0.486, more than six times the legal limit for someone to drive. Now he is unlikely to walk, talk, or see ever again. His mother, Mary Pat, has quit her banking job to take care of him full time. The family has filed cases against the fraternity, the owner of the house, and the frat members. Now, the Santulli family's attorney, David Bianchi, has filed a civil suit against members of Phi Delta Gamma, with all but two settling out of court. So far, Delaney and Schultz are the only people who Boone County has indicted, but further criminal charges are likely. His family previously sued 23 people, including the fraternity, and won their case with an undisclosed settlement, but they are now suing two individual frat boys, Sam Gandhi and Alec Wetzler. They are also demanding felony charges be brought against this pair. Wetzler has been charged with misdemeanor charges of providing alcohol to a minor, and he is no longer enrolled at the school. Gandhi has now been accused, and he remains a student. According to the family's lawsuit, Gandhi saw Danny's dire state but did nothing to help until it was too late. Danny's mother cried on Good Morning America, saying just the fact that nobody knew that he was in distress. His lips were blue and nobody called 911. I mean, six-year-olds called 911. In the last 10 years, Santulli's near-death hazing is the latest in a string of similar incidents in America. There have been more than 200 hazing deaths at school across the country since the 2000, with 2019 being the most deadliest of the years. So I always get in trouble for sounding like a big old teetotaler. Scott, why do you get so upset when people drink and they provide alcohol to minors? Because, well, like I said, it's all fun till somebody dies or gets severely injured. And guess what? Then they go charging everybody. And you have a hazing incident like you do here at school? Come on, really? These guys probably should be charged and have some pretty severe punishment. These idiots would not drink a liter of Tito's or whatever they were drinking that night themselves. And to know that somebody else was going to do that or make them do that is absolutely idiotic. Now, to the young man that drank it, though, and suffered the severe injuries, guess what? You could have gone home. You could have said, I'm not doing this crap, but you did it anyway. I don't know what the right answer is, but listen, I am no teetotaler. I think people have individual responsibility, and there shouldn't be laws out there to prevent people that are not breaking laws from doing something. You need to only punish the people that do it. In this particular occasion, certainly the frat buddies are at fault, but there's a little bit of fault as to the young man who is now permanently disabled. But is it really worth that? Come on, guys, use some common sense. A little common sense. I know common sense is dead. It doesn't exist in the world anymore. But just try. If you're going to abandon your children on the island, don't leave them at Cemetery Island. It just reads really bad on the police reports. So we definitely have another Mother of the Year contestant. Please meet Courtney Taylor and her boyfriend, Eric Elrod. They were initially reported missing after the children ages 12, 13, and 15 were found on Cemetery Island, a popular recreational island along the South Carolina-Georgia state line. The children told Anderson County investigators that they arrived on the island to camp on Sunday and spent the night, and that Taylor and Elrod left Monday morning to get water but had not returned. But Tuesday afternoon, investigators said Taylor had been arrested in neighboring Pickens County and charged with three counts of unlawful neglect of a child. According to a jail record, she has been released the following day after posting a $15,000 personal recognizance bond, which is basically nothing. Elrod, who's wanted on bench warrants relating to an original charge of distribution of methamphetamine and other charges in Pickens County, has not been located and is still at large. Ladies and gentlemen, even when they're teenagers, you can't just leave them overnight. Remember that. All right, next on the docket. That's right, a Disney bus driver. He may be going to the most magical place on Earth. 33-year-old Zachary Hudson is a bus driver at Walt Disney World in Florida, and he was arrested in his official Disney bus uniform at Magic Kingdom on June 6th for allegedly sending photos of his private parts to a minor. An undercover agent posed as a 15-year-old girl and caught Mr. Hudson in this act. Mr. Hudson reportedly sent explicit pictures of himself to the teen while on his work shift at Disney on June 4th and 5th. When the undercover agent asked Mr. Hudson if being 15 years old was an issue for him, Hudson, who thought he was speaking to the teen, replied, "As long as my being older doesn't bother you," and reportedly told her, "Age is just a number." Hudson was charged with one count of use of a two-way communication device to commit a felony and one count of transmitting material harmful to a minor. Hudson's arrest was part of a two-week undercover investigation called Operation Child Protector 2, and during a Friday news conference, authorities said the details are sickening. He said in part, "What would an operation be, either a pre-frigonal investigation or a predator operation or a human trafficking operation, without a Disney employee?" I don't know, because that's where the children are. I don't know. And let me say, the reason I saw that is I watched the documentary about the Boy Scouts of America. I think it's called Without a Trace. And one of the people that was identified in this ultimate cover-up by the Boy Scouts of America for what they called is IVs, ineligible volunteers. They wouldn't go to the police even though they had explicit information that these people were engaging in inappropriate acts with minor boys. And they literally asked one of the criminals during a deposition why he went to the Boy Scouts, and he said, "That's where the kids are. That's where the boys are." Who has been saying that literally since this program started? Be careful, ladies and gentlemen. You got to check everybody out. Go to crimetalksearch.com. I'm telling you, it's the best money you'll ever spend. Check somebody out, particularly if they're going to be around your kids. All right, next on the docket, Dumb Criminal of the Week winner, Justin Michalski, the man who asked police for a ride home, but before they let him into the cruiser, the officers asked him if he had anything illegal on him. He then voluntarily emptied his pockets and removed some marijuana and three bags of cocaine. Today's Dumb Criminal. Please meet Benny Martinez. He was filmed dancing naked on top of a police car. Four officers looked baffled as they surrounded the car, watching Mr. Martinez as he stamped his feet, shouts profanities, and yells, "Do you hear me?" Officers called for backup to get the naked man off the patrol vehicle after he kicked out the car's back window. Mr. Martinez was taken to the department's Hollywood station, cited for misdemeanor vandalism, and later released. Okay, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And as a little bonus, we're going to put a little video up on Patreon. This just shows you how dangerous a job the police officers have out there and why you need to always be on the alert. All right, let's go ahead and close the docket. Hope you enjoyed it today. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.